And now looking back on it, I'm like, I was obviously fine and it was all good. But in my head, it was like, oh, I can't do this. And now looking back, it's like, I think it's so important too for women, especially is knowing your worth. Like, you're valuable to a program. You're valuable, you know, and you talk about that money conversation. Now I'm finding value in, like I mentioned before, my voice. Knowing that I have a voice and my voice actually matters is game changing.
Hey there, you're listening to Virago Pod, a podcast that is dedicated to empowering and improving the physical and mental health of female athletes everywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by the Virago Project, a nonprofit organization that helps female athletes balance sports with life.
I'm your host, Emily McGee-Zaslowski.
And I'm your co-host, Taylor Tracy. Let's jump right into the episode.
Hi, Virago Warriors, and welcome back to episode 26 of Virago Pod. Today's episode, we have Stacey Gregorio joining us. She has played at the collegiate level professionally and coached at a lot of levels as well. She is one of our Virago Project Advisory Board committees. And even though she's on our advisory board, this is actually the first time I've heard her full story and honestly didn't even know she quit. Like, if you hear someone goes to play professionally in Europe, you would never guess that they quit their freshman year. So this is a phenomenal story that I am really excited for you guys to hear, because ultimately, I think we've all been faced in decisions in life, whether it's athletically, personally, like with a breakup or cutting out a toxic friend or family member, or when you're trying to decide if you should make that career change or switch jobs. There's that always kind of gut feeling of like, am I making the right decision? Is this going to cause me to fail? What will other people think about this decision? And you're just kind of overwhelmed. Be sure to stay tuned at the end of the episode, because I do go into some detail on a project we're working on with Stacey, where she'll be helping women in our community decide if a collegiate coach might be a good opportunity for you. All right, let's get into today's episode. All right. On the line now, we have Stacey from our Virago Projects Advisory Committee. I'm really excited to have this conversation because Stacey and I both have two different kind of paths we took, but they were both this kind of non-linear, unconventional, different paths that, at least for me, I haven't talked to Stacey yet, obviously, but could be kind of scary when you're in the middle of the unknown. So I think hearing from people who've kind of gotten through those times and kind of figured it out when we weren't sure if we were going to figure it out is really nice to hear. So thank you so much, Stacey, for agreeing to come on. And I'm really excited to hear your story.
Yeah, of course. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So to start off, we're going to be looking at this in kind of two views, both from the athletic angle and the career angle, since I think those are kind of the two major identities that any current athlete's going to have to face either now or later, or even sometimes I have feelings of regret for my previous playing career, wondering if I always made the right decisions or went down the right path. So I think this could be really good no matter for if people are currently playing or not. So can we start with sharing a bit about your non-linear athletic career and tell me more about the path you took and some of the obstacles that you faced?
Yeah, for sure. So I was sort of forced into playing in middle school by a coach who now looking back on it is like a great friend and somebody who I consider a mentor and stuff like that. And so I was sort of forced into the role of playing basketball. And then it was like a whirlwind from there. It was just kind of like falling in love with it almost instantly. Within my first season, I was sold on the sport. But back then it wasn't really as it is now, where there's 100 AAU teams in your region and you're playing all year long. It wasn't like that. So I didn't really get to that point until maybe like my junior year of high school. And then it was like, okay, well, what club are you going to join? And you have to play all year. And then, you know, you have to start talking to schools and these schools are calling you. And then the recruiting process started. And I think I went through it. I did it. I got offers. Everything was great. But I think something along that line, just I lost that love that I initially had because it became so inundated with every day and every weekend was a game and all this stuff that I think throughout that, yeah, I kind of lost that initial like love that I think because it came on so strong and out of nowhere I don't know. I kind of lost it a little bit throughout that recruiting process. So then I went to college. I had a lot of offers and I didn't really take them because they were on the East Coast and they were far away from home. And I just kind of hit that, yeah, kind of almost burnt out phase. And so I ended up going to a school in on the West Coast, Pacific. And I started playing and, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't that dream, right, of college basketball. It wasn't like, oh, I love this. You know, it became a chore to me. And I just kind of was burnt out. I wanted to be home for the holidays with my family. I went through that kind of, a lot of freshmen go through it, right? Like that whole freshman phase. And so I just sort of had this moment where I was like, I don't think this is what I want. Basketball was great for me, but I think I'm good. I think I want to enjoy the college experience, be a regular student. And so I did. I stopped playing. I just graduated, you know, loved my friends and loved my school and all that stuff. And it was great. Moved back home after I graduated, started working for Nike. And I was just kind of like wondering what the next step was for me. And through a lot of self-reflection, I realized that I probably left some things on the table that I kind of wanted to explore. And we talk about like regrets as a player and stuff. And I think that part of me was in there, like, what, you know, what did you not do that you could have done? And I think I was grappling with that inside, you know, and didn't really know what to do with that. So I started playing in this women's league and it was like just a rec league, nothing like special, but I had that same sort of like seventh grade desire to play again was kind of ignited. And then I'm like, well, what do I do with this? So that went into me actually tearing my ACL in one of these games, in one of these rec league games. And I'm sitting there with this terrible injury that I didn't know anything about. At that time, it wasn't as prominent as it is now in sports. Especially women's sports. And so I was just like, I have to go through this rehab. I have to have surgery. I have to go through this rehab process for what? Like there was no motivation. There was nothing. So these thoughts kept, you know, in my head, keep going about like, what did I do? I want to still play. I miss it. I miss that athletic motivation to, you know, get back and recover from injury and do those things. So I was at physical therapy, talking to my physical therapist, just kind of lacking motivation, going through that like injury depression type thing. And so I started doing some research. Well, in California, they have a rule in the junior college level that's a little different than most JUCOs. And that rule is that you can play no matter how old you are. There's no limit. There's no clock as long as you still have eligibility. Well, at this point, I had only really started, I started my clock, but I hadn't used my eligibility. So I still had the 2 years you can play at a JUCO. So I was like, I'm just going to move to California and play JUCO. I already have my degree, but whatever. So while I was researching schools, I didn't really tell anyone, especially my family, because explaining that you're going to go from having your bachelor's degree to go to a JUCO and start everything over again it's not a really great conversation to have with a lot of people. So I kept it in. While I was doing research on schools, I was also studying for the LSAT because I was a political science major. So the next step seemed logical to go to law school. And so I was definitely pulled, right? I was like very conflicted in what I wanted to do, but there was just this desire in me to keep playing basketball and kind of find something in there that I lost. So after many months of not really saying anything to anybody, I got in contact with a coach in San Diego at a JUCO. And he was like, this story's different. He's like, at the time I was 22. He's like, we don't have a lot of 22-year-olds on the team. Most of them are 18, 19, you know, right out of high school. And they're looking to play at the four-year level. So this is kind of different. He was like, but if you don't mind being older, you know, clearly you had stats in high school, clearly you were capable. So come on down. So after loads of talking to myself in the mirror and building up the courage to tell my parents what I was about to do, I loaded up my car and I packed away the LSAT books and I drove down to San Diego, moved there, played, met some incredible people, people that are my best friends to this day. And I had an amazing 2 years there. And so then I graduated, or I didn't graduate. I finished my 2 years of eligibility because I already did that. And I couldn't play it a 4 year because you couldn't go back. So my eligibility was done. My clock was up. So at that point, my coach at San Diego told me that, well, if you want to keep playing, your only option is to go overseas. And so I was like, okay, am I good enough? Like, I didn't even know what that meant. And so I got with some people that knew, coaches overseas and those kinds of things, an agent, and we sat down and we mapped it out, and I started training from that point on. And I was fortunate enough through just a lot of really great people to make it and be able to play 2 years overseas. And I had an incredible experience. And that was pretty much my really long, windy path as an athlete.
So originally, did you quit after your freshman year or your sophomore year?
Freshman. Okay. I didn't even finish my freshman year. Yeah. And part of it was most of it was me just being super homesick and just not wanting to. I remember finding out that like we couldn't go home for Christmas and we couldn't do those things. And that was just for an 18-year-old me. I was not ready for that. Part of it was, I think it wasn't really the fit for me. And I knew that going in, it was just like a distance thing. And so, yeah.
Yeah, no. So Taylor and I actually, we talked about this a little earlier. I think it was like episode 5 with someone who like really struggled with similar things, who didn't quit, but like we all talked about how we considered quitting our freshman year. And we even like made a little bonus episode, just talk like Taylor and I just went down and be like, this is why our freshman year absolutely sucked. And one of it was like, really, like, I mean, you can be as prepared as you think, but you will literally never understand the expectations, and no coaches can fully prepare you for it either. Because like, and I mean, you're a coach now, and you know, part of the gig is you're like wining and dining these kids to come to your school. So you're talking about all the great things, about all the communities, the clubs. So you have this picture, and even Hollywood, right? Hollywood picks like, not only freshman year is this like, oh, it's kind of scary, but how fun I found myself in college. But then like, you know, like everyone kind of thinks they're going to play. Everyone kind of thinks like they've had relationships with their coaches. So freshman year is like a big culture shock, but I think it's so cool because like you would never like, well, I'm not going to say never because who knows what would have happened, but your storyline of playing professional very possibly never would have happened unless you quit your freshman year.
And I don't think it does, mainly because I was already feeling burnout. And my only desire to finish and play for those 4 years was, of course, the scholarship, right? Is to go to school for free, is to have those things. And there's no way I played 4 straight years of that, never going home, you know, that kind of environment, and then want to continue. Like, it just doesn't happen. I know that. Yeah. So I don't have a professional career if not for that. So.
Well, and I think it's also really interesting because a lot of people who, I mean, people listening to this will know because a lot of them were probably recruited, but you're like making decisions for the rest of your life. I remember I started getting recruited at like 12 years old, 13 years old, and rules have luckily changed some. So, but that's what the reality was. So you're like making these lifelong decisions, trying to put yourself in these shoes. So people don't really like talk about it enough. And I really related to you like not telling anyone, even like, I'm not sure, did you tell people you're like studying for the LSAT too?
Oh no.
Yeah. Like, so you're like doing this stuff, and I'm not sure if that's like necessarily an athlete quality, but like almost like I need to make the decisions for me. You like, no one's going to understand, but like, ultimately, I'm sure when you told your family, like, oh, I'm going to go play out here, they're probably supportive. But like in your head, you think like, they're going to think I'm crazy. They're not going to understand. Like, I think this is what I want. And so like, you keep it almost like a secret from everyone of like your dreams or what you think the next step's going to be. And I think it's kind of rooted in like fear of failure. So like, what if you move out to California, drop everything, and you still hate it? Like, what if your ACL doesn't hold up and now I just did all this for literally nothing. What was your experience kind of telling people that, well, one, you wanted to quit originally, and two, you wanted to stop playing? Like, what were people's reactions?
Yeah, I think it's definitely fear of failure. I think I've always like, you know, whether you're talking about in the classroom or on the court, I've always succeeded at those things. And so to not kind of go on this path, to take another path, scared me. But it also made me feel like, okay, well, if I tell my friends, like, you know, I was the basketball player in high school, right? That's how everyone knew me. That's how I was associated. It was like you said, Stacy and basketball, it was like one and the same. My identity was linked completely with basketball. And so for that freshman year decision to not play, it was like, okay, like, now what are they going to think of me, you know, as if I didn't have any other qualities besides being a basketball player. And then that was the same thing later, was that I wasn't identifying myself as a basketball player anymore. And I found comfort in that. I was fine with it. You know, I had a great experience, but going back to a JUCO to me felt like I was taking five steps backwards at the time. And, you know, how do you explain that to people? That's not a 2-second conversation. So then I'm thinking, well, they're going to judge me. You know, I have my bachelor's degree, but I'm at a JUCO, you know? And so many of those fears of what people will think played a way bigger role into what it really was. Now, looking back, it was like the greatest decision of my life. And my family was incredibly supportive. Of course, they had some questions, but they were so supportive of me. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't even really that big of a deal in the big scheme of things. It was just kind of like my next step, even though if you look at it linear, it wasn't really the next step. It was like a few steps ago, but it, you know, it was that exact thing, is that, well, I want to study for the LSATs, but I'm not going to tell anybody until I'm already taking it. And I potentially have a good score to follow up with that. And that's how I think of things, you know, and that's how I've always done it. It's like, okay, well, I'm not going to announce where I'm going to school until I know exactly where I'm going and those kinds of things. Because then if you do backtrack, it felt like, you know, it would take away from who I was and my identity.
Yeah, I think that's really good points. And I think it's really common. And even to your fact, it brings up, like, you bring up athlete identity. And it's even to the point of, like, you saying you didn't even know the professional options, because really your whole life when you're, and it's the same with volleyball. When I was growing up, the goal, right, the dream was get a scholarship to play in college. And that was like the end all be all. And if you did that, you're good. Like, wash your hands. Like, okay, the coaches can take a breath. The program directors are like, all right, now we can focus on these other kids who still need to get their scholarships. Like, it was like this whole, like, and I mean, that's obviously how our programs are making money, because there's have a percentage of people that they can tout get college scholarships. But like the fact that, like, and a small percentage go professional too. But like, I mean, a lot of people don't even know it was an option. I didn't know it was an option until like one of my teammates went, and some had good experiences, some had bad experiences, but like there was no education on it to even know if that was something that was right for me. So I think that's like a good thing you bring up too, that especially as leagues, I know there's some leagues that are coming to the United States with Athletes Unlimited in a few sports, and like just seeing more WNBA players and even knowing that there's a Europe league in different sports, I think is really big. But yeah, the fear of failure is, I will say, it's an athlete thing. I'm not going to like throw myself under the bus and say I'm just like extremely stubborn, but I've talked about it a bit before. Right after college, I got married to the guy I was dating. I think I got engaged like his graduation weekend, and I was like miserable, like horribly miserable. He unfortunately just wasn't like the, like, and I'm different as Emily, the athlete in college, than Emily, the, I don't want to say real person, I'm still real, but like in the real world. And I was like, whoa, this is like a shock. But like, I stayed with him. Like, I was like, oh, we'll do this. But like, I think, I don't even think we lasted a year of being married. And I decided to divorce him. And I told my family, and I was like horrified. I was like, I literally had already decided, like, it got so bad that I decided I was divorcing this man. Like, not even just like, oh, I'm taking a break. And I was like terrified. And everyone's like, I'm surprised it took this long. And I was just so shocked, because I thought everyone was going to be like, no, no, no. Like, let's rethink this. Let's do something more conventional. This is the way it should be done. But I was just like overwhelmed with everyone's like support. Like, so I think a lot of it too is like, I saw as going back to being single, as like vain as it is like a huge failure of like, how am I supposed to have kids before I'm 40? If I'm getting single again at 26, 27. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like, how will I do this? And then like, you have to think, it's really, really hard, but you have to think what decision, this is what worked for me. I'll ask you later what kind of worked for you, but like, you have to now that like 5 years from you will be happy. So I'm sure it was really hard and maybe embarrassing to admit I'm taking this step backwards, but you took that gamble and it was essentially right. And like the same thing luckily worked out for me, but when you're in that moment, making that decision to go back or to not do anything with your LSAT, it's like scary. It's like, you almost feel like, what if I, not just the fear of failure, but like, there's a high probability I could fail.
And I think there's also like a thing that I grappled with a lot was thinking like, not that there's something wrong with me, but that like, you know, at that point, so I'm comparing myself and, you know, I know you're not, I know way more now, but 22-year-old Stacey didn't realize, like, don't compare yourself to other people, but people that I went to high school with were already applying for law school, or they were already doing these big things. And here I am sitting there talking about going backwards. And so I think a lot of that too, for me, was just like, why can't I just like go to law school? Why can't I just get a normal job, right? Where I sit in an office building and be, and do those things from 9 to 5. And I do, I, even now, like sometimes those thoughts will creep into my head, not like a lot, but just when I'm going constantly with the grind and I don't have the normal, you know, the job where you can just take off, put in for PTO, like that doesn't exist in the athletic world. And so my friends are going on vacations and they're taking time off and all these things, and I can't do that. And I noticed those thoughts still are there. They're not completely gone, but back then they were much louder. And it was like, all your friends are going to law school, just go to law school, you know? And I couldn't, there was a part of me deep down that I knew I couldn't see myself in a suit in an office for 8-10 hours a day. I just couldn't do it. And I knew that. And then it was like getting the courage to say that out loud to people. That was a whole nother experience. And that took years. I mean, even though I was taking steps by going and playing in San Diego and I was doing those things, it still took years to accept out loud that I wasn't going to be a lawyer and I wasn't going to follow that path. And that's been it's hard. It's a lot harder than it sounds.
Yeah. Okay. So take me through that. So explain how you decided to divert. So your playing career is over. Like, I guess how you decided to stop playing professionally and how you decided to divert then from that more quote unquote traditional career path of law school, or even like you said, just an office job.
Yeah. So I was overseas. I went first to Germany, was my first contract. I played there for a season. And then I came back and was waiting to kind of hear what was next. And I got this high school job, a high school basketball coach at a local high school in San Diego. And this is where the transition, I guess, from like, who knows what my real career will be, to like, I know what I want it to be. So I got hired there. And it was this charter school in San Diego that is not for, it's for low-income students who are first generation. So their parents are not from the United States and they couldn't have gone to any school in the United States, any college, and they couldn't, and they had to live at a certain financial level. So it was to help these kids get out of bad situations, and poverty. And hopefully when they graduate, if they graduate within good standing, they get a full ride to a UC school. So this program, it's an incredible school, but it's not made for sports. So they don't have the funding and they don't have those types of things to build up a program. They play in the lowest division in San Diego. So it's not like great basketball, but I knew my time in the States was short because my plan was to go back overseas. So they were okay with that. It was kind of just a mutual, they were like, okay, cool. We want somebody who's young and enthusiastic that's okay with kind of taking the program from the ground up. So I started at the school and it was another one of those moments in my life where you just fall in love with an experience that you probably shouldn't because it wasn't great basketball, but the kids were incredible. They were the nicest. They loved having a young female role model that they could just talk to, not really about basketball, but just life. And we spent so much time together and you learn so much about these kids that go through so much. And it's just eye-opening. It's just one of those experiences that changes your life. And it did. It really did for so many reasons. But career-wise, it was like coaching in those games. It was like, I couldn't even compare it to anything else. There's no greater joy for me than it was at that moment to coach. So that's kind of when I really hit that, like, okay, when I put that LSAT book away, it wasn't just temporary. Like, I'm not opening that back up kind of feeling. It was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And there's no question. And that wasn't, like I said, that wasn't because of the basketball aspect. It was like the connections, to be able to have these connections with student athletes is something that I don't think I'll ever grow out of. That's not something I'm going to get bored of. I'm going to want to do this whether I'm 25 or 55. So while I was doing that, I was still training and kind of pursuing my own career as far as a player. And so I coached them for two seasons. So I ended up staying two seasons in the States. Just an incredible time. And so then I got another contract to go to Spain. And it was a really heartbreaking decision. I almost didn't go because I loved these kids so much. And it was like, I don't know how long I can be a high school coach at a charter school where you don't really make any money versus like, you know, playing and making actual money and stuff like that. So in the end, I ended up going overseas and definitely missed the kids. I missed them so much that I forced a friend of mine. He was actually my coach. To take over the program because I refused to let anyone else take over this program because I love the kids so much and they deserved a good coach. And so I go back overseas and I play in Spain. And then when I come back a year later, I realize, you know, I had a lot of time to think because overseas there's not, you don't play as much basketball as you do in the States. So but a lot of downtime. And I kind of came to the conclusion that was, okay, well, if I want to do this as a career, how do I make it so that I can support myself financially and I can have a life doing this? And there's two options. You can become a teacher and coach high school basketball, or you coach at the college level. Those are pretty much your only options if you don't want to, you know, work another job. Mm-hmm. And so clearly I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to coach. So I was like, okay, well then I guess I have to try to get into college basketball. So when I got back, I was like, okay, I have to start doing this. Did a lot of research and, you know, it's hard to move up and be in college basketball. It's not any college sport, right? It's hard. People do it their whole lives. Head coaches are older and stuff like that. So you have to, if you can get in, you have to get in. So that was kind of another crossroads where I decided it was probably time to hang up the playing career part and start the actual career part. And so that's when I plunged in and dove right in and tried to get a coaching job. And I did. And so I ended up, I went to the Final Four, which is kind of where there's a coaching convention. And that's kind of where a lot of coaches are at the end of the year, and just met, you know, a lot of people. And I ended up getting my first job at UC San Diego, which actually was just ironic, but I didn't have to move. I stayed in San Diego. And I got to work for one of the most incredible people ever, Heidi Vanderveer, whose sister is the head coach at Stanford. And so through that, you know, doors just opened like so fast. And I had this whirlwind of opportunity and just learning experience. And then that's kind of how I got into it. And that's why I'm where I am today.
No, that's awesome. And I can tell like you're very passionate about it. And like you know for sure this is like where you want to be, which I think is like really hard that a lot of people don't have. Like, because I do think I'm a strong believer that not everyone, you don't have to necessarily love what you do. Is if you're doing this for money, so you love traveling, go travel. But like if you can love what you do, like and like figure out a way to make it work, I think that's like obviously ideal. I have a lot of friends, both men and women, who have been athletes and then they retired and became coaches, like either like you said, at the high school level, trying to teach, or even club. Some love it and they're still there, but there's definitely like, I feel like a divide of people who end up loving it. And then the divide of people who, I'm not offending this. I'm not saying this offensively. And I think they would agree with me. They're doing it because it's what they know. They were always the athlete. They had the sport. They had some connections there. So when they're like, I don't know what I should do for work, they got presented this opportunity because they are very good. I'm sure they are very good coaches too. It's not even like they're bad. But it just wasn't, they're like, this isn't really what's doing it for me. Although I may be good at it and know it, it's not for me. So do you have any tips for people who are like trying to decide, should I be staying in the sports industry? Because I think it's a thought that's probably crossed nearly everyone who's an athlete, like, will I coach one day? So do you have any tips for like how you knew that it was more than just like, oh, this is what I should do because I'm a good basketball player?
Yeah, I think it's actually funny because obviously we all had those thoughts, right? I come from coaching a high school program where I just love it every day. And I talked to a lot of people when I was making that, you know, step from being a high school coach to a college coach. And I had the same person who I played for at San Diego and took over the high school program for me. He's obviously a good friend and kind of a mentor as far as my career. And he said, he was like, you need to go coach D1. He was like, not because it's the level that you want to be at or have to be at to succeed. That's not it at all. But if you go to the D1 level as a coach and you can handle and you're good, and at the end of the day, you still love your job every day because it is so much more of a business at this level, then you found it, then it's for you. And I think that that was really good advice. At the time, I was a little just overwhelmed and I was just trying to get in. And so I didn't really have a dream level or a dream job or anything like that. But now that I'm here at the D1 level, I know that this is it for me. Like there, I have the same feeling here that I did at the high school level, but I can make a career out of it here. So I think it's like, you know, can you give up the, you know, the vacations that I talked about earlier, the ability to take days off? Can you work 12 months out of the year and still at the end of the day, love it? You know, we do work 12-hour days, you know, at this level, it's just a lot. There's so much that goes into it. And if you can and you enjoy it still at the end of the day, you're not annoyed by it, then I think that it's for you. And I think there's merit in once you have realized that, then going to other levels. And, you know, because I think there's value in every level. But this is the ultimate test, I think, as far as like for younger people, like, can you do this forever? Because it is going to be a lot. And it's always going to be, you know, it's always going to be a grind. There's no time off. There's none of that. So for me, it was like testing the waters a little bit at this level to see if I could, I was okay with it and still came out with the love, because I think you do get bogged down and then sometimes you do lose the love. I think that's in any business, right? Like, it sounds all great at first. And then when you're in it, you're just kind of like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. And I can honestly say that after being here, like this is, I made no mistake in my decision. And so I think my advice for anyone is like, if you can get to a place where you're working so much and you're making those sacrifices and you're having to, you know, give up certain things and you still love it at the end of the day, then you got to stick with it, because those jobs, those kind of opportunities are so rare for anyone. I can talk to any of my friends who are lawyers or doctors or whatever. And, you know, if they don't have that love at the end of the day, then it's not the job for them either. And so I think that's like my biggest thing.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point, because I'm actually thinking, like, I was like talking about hypothetical people. I forgot. I literally helped at my old programs 12 team when I had that same itch. I went to finance, but I was like, I wonder if finance is it for me. I was like, let me work part-time coaching in the 12s team. My team did not win a game all year. And I was like, okay, this is the end for me. Like, and it wasn't because I was a bad coach, but I was just like, okay, yeah, I just don't love this. Like, I forgot. I love volleyball because I love winning and competing and like, yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't for me. So I was going to say that whatever I said, like, if I said anything offensive, that were my experiences, because it definitely was not for me. Like, but I wanted to be involved in sport. And so, you know, I kind of found it eventually. But like I said, I was in finance for like 8 years, similar kind of to like, this is what my dad did. I was a daddy's girl. I knew it. I grew up in it. I knew this is what I was always going to do. So I kind of had that very, you know, binary mindset of like, I'm getting a business degree. I only looked at schools that had good business programs. I got my business degree and I went into finance, and I ended up like switching around a lot and, you know, wasn't necessarily happy, but it did, like I said, complete other things. So I don't regret going into finance, but something that you mentioned before we started this interview, I wanted to talk about, because I had this experience too in finance, but it is being a woman in a male dominated field. Now, I would argue this even counts just as a woman athlete, since we face stereotypes, but even coaches, I'm assuming just from the women's basketball that I do know there are some women head coaches, but there are still a lot of men's coaches in women's basketball. So what's your experience been like working in male dominated industries? And do you have any tips, advice for people considering it or facing it now?
Yeah, it's definitely a male-dominated world. I mean, I think sports are in general, right? Yeah. And we talk about this a lot too, even just, you know, day to day. But so I work for a male head coach, and prior to this, I worked for a female head coach. So I've kind of been at both, and I think there's value in both, and there's amazing coaches, both male and female. I would say that the biggest thing that I learned, and I still struggle with this, I definitely have not mastered this, but Muffet McGraw, who used to be the head coach at Notre Dame, she made this speech at the Final Four one year. And it was the year I was really kind of trying to get into sport, basketball as a coach and at the college level. And she said that she'll get 10 calls a day from guys who think they're qualified for this job, right? And they may check one of the boxes in all the lists of things, the qualifications, but she won't get any women calling to advocate for themselves because they didn't check every single box. You know, they might have checked one or two or three, but they're really good. But because they didn't check all of them, they didn't apply for the job. And this was me to the T, like to the T. So I understand that it's so hard for women to break through because they haven't been in it for as long as men have. And now there's been this great force in women's basketball that is so exciting. And it is this force towards hiring women as head coaches. And it's really changing the face of basketball for women. And I think I'm just lucky enough to be at this time where it will be easier for me to become a head coach when I'm ready. But I think it's finding this confidence within that, like, I might not check every single box for the job that I'm applying for, but I know that I'm qualified. You know, I know that I've learned from the best. I know that I've done my research. I know that I'm ready to take the next step, whatever that is. And to just apply for the job that you don't think you're qualified for, you know, do the interview you don't think you're ready for, have those conversations with, you know, your head coaches or mentors or whatever about taking those giant steps, because the only way you really do it is just like kind of being thrown into the fire and realizing that you can do it. And I think for women, especially, you know, like I can relate to this 100%, like I don't like to do stuff if I'm not ready. Like I don't just wing a test, like, okay, we'll see what happens. Like I wasn't that kind of student. It's like, no, I'm going to make sure I know everything and I'm ready and I'm over prepared. And so I think in order to grow in this business, women in general have to find this confidence within that guys kind of naturally have, you know, just because they've been allowed to for so much longer than we have, and do the hard thing and the scary thing, because I think that is, at the end, we're going to be pleasantly surprised when we do get the call that we did get that job and that we can do this. And that I also think that we have a strong desire to influence our student athletes and an appeal to our student athletes because they can relate to us in a different way than they can relate to our male counterparts. So even if, you know, this guy might have a couple more years of experience than I might, I have an ability to relate to our student athletes probably in a different way than he can. And that is vital to our success as a program, any program, right? Is that ability. And I think that that's something that women just naturally have on the women's side, which makes sense. And so I think that that's something that we have to take those things and allow us to do that. And I would say, like, so for me getting to Kansas State, I refused to apply for the job actually, because I was in that mindset. I knew I wanted to move up. I knew I wanted to give D1 a try. But I was terrified. I saw the job posting and I was like, I can't get that job. Literally the exact conversation I was talking about. And my friends were like, that's dumb. Apply for the job. And it took them basically hounding me to apply for this job that I just figured I was inadequate. I wasn't ready. It wasn't my time. It was too big of a job, those kinds of things. And through a lot of different factors, I got it, obviously. And it wasn't because I wasn't prepared. It wasn't, you know, those things were not it. It was just finding this confidence within me to come to work every day and be like, okay, I know what I'm doing here. Like, this is what I know, and being able to succeed in that way. And I think like that has helped me personally build that confidence that I was kind of referring to always. And I think that women, you know, women need to try to have that because it's really hard. It's really hard when you're every day faced with just men having these mm-hmm. positions and these roles and stuff like that. And we see it on the men's side, you know, there's like less than 1% of male coaches on the men's side are females. That's not the same percentage on the women's side. So there's clearly a disparity there. And so now I think it's really exciting for women's basketball specifically to see that the tide is sort of changing. And so that's really exciting.
No, I love that. Two episodes ago, we had someone founded like Shape the Game, and it was talking about how having women role models really are different. Like you said, like you can relate differently to these players, and not just because you're a woman, but because you've been there. Like the locker, and even if these male coaches are former athletes, I think we can all agree that a woman's locker room dynamic is going to be different than a male's locker room dynamic. Yes. How a woman coach has seen her body in her lifetime, and like these body image issues, body confidence issues, it's going to impact, like, you know, and this is not even about my college coach. This is like male coaches in general that I've had. A lot of them have said really insensitive things about my body. I'm lucky enough that like they shouldn't be saying that to everyone. Like things that they could have said if I had problems could have broken me. So I think having women, one is important. And two, like you said, we don't necessarily, women in general, not just you, obviously you're a strong, confident woman. Look at you. We're on this podcast. We're obviously confident enough. Like I said the same thing in that podcast, that like my default was when my daughter is going to be playing soccer, that I was going to have my husband coach her. And it's like, no, I'm coaching her because I'm a woman and I'm better at soccer than my husband, who's, you know, played when he was 10. So I think it's one of those things that like we just have to start putting ourselves in the position and not fearing that rejection, because maybe you wouldn't have gotten the job. Like maybe you apply, you don't get the job, but that has nothing to do with you as a person. That could mean someone else was more capable, more eligible, but like doesn't do you any harm in applying. So I think it's really important to remember how powerful woman is. And one of the main barriers I've heard from my women friends who are looking to get into coaching or are coaching now is a lot of problems, just not even just with equality, but like you said, paid time off, not vacation, this very regimen schedule that's really long. It makes it really hard to do things like, you know, a lot of women do want to start a family someday. And the idea of maternity leave, the idea of picking up or dropping off kids from school, daycare, to the concept of all these things that like don't, and maybe your school does, but I know a lot of schools do not have a solution for that. I know like my high school coach, she was awesome. And she literally like made it happen that she did not get maternity leave. She like gave birth like during season, but like her in-laws came, the kids were at the gym, they were very well behaved kids, but she brought them to practice. Like she made it work and figured out a solution, but she wasn't afraid to voice it. And she was a very good coach. And it was like, I'm sure it wasn't even a discussion. They're like, yes, we love you. Please don't leave. We'll do anything to make it work, but it's very possible. And that's a high school schedule, right? Practicing 3 hours a day. And they were able to make that work. So I think having more women who can get involved in the sports industry will also make that a better place, because just now, even in COVID, I know lots of works. My husband is a lawyer. We're talking all about lawyers. He is a lawyer, like a big law down here in Dallas, Texas. And he has now like had this hard line of like, I do bath and bedtime for our daughter. Like that's just something that I do now, because he's working from home and he just blocks off that time. His partner like is picking up his daughter from school, and so blocks out that time on there. And like, it's things that now that these men are having the opportunity to be more involved in childcare and raising families, they're like making it happen and making that a priority. So I'm hopeful, but it wasn't until they were staying at home. So I'm hopeful if more women too get involved, the idea of having a family and being a coach can go more hand in hand. Cause I think that's what makes a lot of women, the friends I've had, at least I have a very small sample cycle, drop out of coaching. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think what we saw was a lot with this tournament. Adia Barnes, the head coach at Arizona, she gave birth during the season, and she had her two kids in the bubble with them. And I think for us to see it was remarkable. You know, obviously, I don't have kids yet. I want to have kids and all those things. And so to see that, it does kind of demystify those stereotypes for women that we feel. You feel it, like you're told right away, and I've mentioned it several times, like you have to sacrifice to be in this business. You do lose the certain times with family. You do lose that stuff. And when you talk about those sacrifices, well, women have to give birth. They have to be pregnant during those times. They have to have the kid. You talk about breastfeeding. You have to do these things as a mother that you can't, you know, the father doesn't have to do. And so you do see these things as great big barriers into being a head coach. Like, well, if I want to be a head coach, I clearly can't take a year off and have a family, start a family. I can't do that. And I think we're starting to see a shift in that. And I think it was great to see great competition in the tournament. But what was greater was seeing a mom show the world that a young mother, a mother with a baby, can play at the highest, you know, can coach at the highest level and be on the biggest stage and still at halftime breastfeeding her child. And I think stuff like that is rare. Like, we have not seen that in any, there has not been a coach to show that. Not that it hasn't happened, but in the past, it's been mostly men that have had those roles. And so now it's like, it's changing the course. And so as we have coaches moving up, and I would be considered in that, you know, moving up into the coaching world, I now don't see it as much of a barrier. It is, but I am seeing people. And I think we talk about this a lot too. It's about seeing people that look like you. So you see a mom that can have a kid and still coach in the national championship game that same year. Like, there's nothing more motivating or inspiring for upcoming coaches and motivation for females to stay in coaching and not leave because they say, well, I, you know, family is more important. Or for people like me to not have to say, well, I guess I just won't have a family because my main goal in life is to be a head coach. And like, I don't feel like that has to be my option anymore. And so I think seeing it is so powerful for females.
It's so awesome. I'm so glad you brought up that example. So I remember even thinking, I was so glad the media, and I don't even care if it's like, they're trying to make headlines or whatever and clickbait. I don't even care because I just think it's awesome that it's being seen and talked about and normalized because like, it is a, like the fact that that was such a story just shows like, maybe that wasn't the norm before. Maybe we should look at why it wasn't and see why this is one, awesome, two, inspiring other people, and three, like, what can we all do to make sure that that can happen? Because she obviously did it, and it did not sacrifice her team's ability to get it done this season. So I think that's a perfect example of more women coaches who, and you know, not everyone has to be a spokesman, but the more it's seen, the more it'll be like normalized as well. So that's great.
Yeah, and we do need people to normalize it, because otherwise then you're going to think, especially when you're younger, like I think when you are in a position like I'm in, you think like, oh my gosh, I can't have anything get in the way of like my career, and I can't have any excuse to not be there for every meeting or every, you know, I can't mm-hmm. take 5 months off, like I can't do those things. And it's like, but if you see it happening and at the highest level, you're like, okay, I can actually make this work, and that's what we need.
Yeah, because you can now start picturing it. Like, you're in this grind right now and you're like, I have no clue, but like now you're seeing a ton. So you talked before too about not having, you know, the confidence to apply or even make your own path. What have you learned now that you're through it and on the other side of it? How were you able to find confidence in yourself when others may have been negative or even yourself may have put you down and doubted the path that you were on? How have you found confidence?
I think the first thing for me is just like my support system was incredible. You know, we go back to talking earlier about my decision to move to San Diego, and I don't think my parents were like, oh yes, she's going back to school to junior college. Like, I don't think that was their reaction, but just the fact that they were like, okay, well, if this is what you want to do, like, sounds good. And they just had this belief in me that at some point I was going to figure it out no matter what that looked like. And so I think that just drawing strength from other people was really what it was about. And when I talk about applying to Kansas State, I have this one friend and she was like, you're getting that job. And she was like joking, but serious too. And it was like, okay, well, I have zero confidence in my ability to get this job. So I'm drawing all my strength from you guys. And they believed it way before I did. I didn't believe it until I got the call. And so that has been just the biggest deal. And I think I could go through the list of people who have been, you know, just really important in my journey. But I think it really comes down to just the people having that belief in you. And that allowed me to have belief in myself eventually. And now, now that I'm on the other side, I'm like, okay, yeah, like I feel confident in applying for jobs. I feel confident in my voice in the room during meetings and those kinds of things that I would have never said that 3-4 years ago. I would have never had the confidence to say what I think in a room full of coaches. Like there's no way. And so I think that has been huge. And I think a lot of it has come from other females. And so I think that's kind of one of my biggest takeaways. One of my friends that I coached with at UC San Diego, she was just like this voice for me that was constantly trying to like keep me up and keep me, you know, motivated. And I think just having somebody that, you know, we were in similar positions, she could have easily been like, okay, we're kind of competing a little bit and not try to lift me up. You know, she could have been like, I'm going to do my job and try to keep you down so that I can rise above. And it wasn't like that at all. And I think those special women that you come across in your life are the ones that help you so much through, you know, all these trials and tribulations and all these times where we doubt ourselves, because it's not just going to end. Like I'm not never going to be, you know, through adversity now that I made it. It's not, you know, it's not going to be like that at all. And so knowing that I have this whole support system just makes me have confidence now. And I know that if I do fall or something happens down the road where I'm questioning whatever it is, I know that I have these people that were there from the jump and that they're going to be there now. And I've also been fortunate enough to come into a place here where I feel loved. And I feel supported by other people here. And I think that's so powerful because, again, you could easily be competitive with each other, right? Like we all want the same thing at the end of the day. We all want to be assistant coaches. We all want to be head coaches. We always want those roles. But it's about women empowering women. And that's been the single greatest thing besides our student athletes of me enjoying this role that I'm in right now.
I think you brought up so many good points, and we've actually had, because we've talked about support, like how important support people are for so many things, from, you know, deciding where to go to recruiting to even like eating disorders and having those people. And the common thread is like, you feel, and it's completely normal, you feel like you may not have a great support system until you let them in. And then all of a sudden you're like almost overwhelmed with how awesome they are. Like you might be afraid that mentor at work may be mean to you because they think they're coming for your job. But it's actually shocking that like, if you just shoot your shot and like open the door or let your parents in. Cause like we've even had like people DM us on from Virago Pod that are parents. Like I've had a dad message and like, hey, just so you know, like I know I'm not your target, but this has been so great for me to get like an inside. Cause I feel like I can now support. I'm like, that just broke my heart. Like, I mean, yes, my dad listens to my podcast because that's what my dad does, but I'm like, this warms my heart that strangers' dads are listening to this podcast just because they want to be there for their children. So, we encourage it a lot. Just don't be like your support system can be your biggest thing. And, don't be afraid to like involve them because they'll surprise you. Like, your worst critic is like so overused, but it's so true. Like if you could only see yourself through the eyes of your friends, your family, your former teammates, your coaches, they have all the faith in the world. Like how you used to hype each other up before a night out on like your outfit, like they will be those same hype people for you, like in your career. You also brought up a really good point of like how like, hey, I did this and now like I've been there. So now I'm like, chill, I can apply to other jobs. I thought that was like a really big takeaway because it's super scary the first time. So I just want to tell everyone whatever is like you're freaking out about. Like I remember my very first job, I got out of college in finance. I got a job offer for $40,000 and I was like, that is awesome. Like I am so excited. And my dad was like, yeah, tell them you'll take it for 45,000. And I'm like, dad, they won't take me. They'll be offended and they will walk away. And then they're like, no, really you should ask for 50 and hope for 45. But like, hey, your entry level is your first job. Like ask for 45. And I was like, I just can't. And he's like, I sit here with you. I will like write stuff down. And like, I remember like calling my boss back and like had a little script in front of me. And I was like, thank you so much for your offer. I am really excited to work at Morgan Stanley. And I'm like reading from the paper. However, due to, and I had this like line about like, due to my future, like, I know how important my first salary is for the rest of my career here. So I would like to, I'd be happy to accept the job with $45,000. And he's like, he kind of like chuckled, because I'm sure he could tell I was like, so nervous in reading, but he was like, yes, we can do $45,000. And I was just like, just literally, there was no deliberate, like he had a scale. And so then after that, I switched jobs a bunch trying to find my happiness, which is a whole nother podcast. But I switched jobs like 3 or 4 times in finance. And every time, like, it was easy to switch because I'm getting paid like 10 grand more each time, because I'm just asking for it. And it was not scary. I was like, yeah, we're say no, I dare you. Like, I'm a great candidate and I am worth that extra 5 grand, which when you do the math is like $200 a month or something. Like, you guys can afford it. So I think that's awesome advice of like, the first time you do anything's going to be scary. You're going to freak out. You're not going to be ready, and you might fail and it might be super awkward. But it'll get better. And after you do it once, like, it is so much easier the next time.
Yeah. I think, that reminded me of, so the night before I left for my interview here, I was flying out to interview. I got the email from them about what the day was, like the itinerary for the day. And I was at the sports banquet for my last job at UC San Diego. And I told my head coach, I said, yeah, I'm not going, because I saw the itinerary and it was like, you have to take a test and you have to do all these things and an interview with this person, an interview. And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Because I was like, I'm going to fail. And she laughed and she was like, you know, she's been through it, right? So she was on the other end of it. And she's like, you're going to be fine. She was like, you're going and you're going to be fine. And now looking back on it, I'm like, I was obviously fine and it was all good. But in my head, it was like, oh, I can't do this. And now looking back, it's like, I think it's so important too for women, especially, is like knowing your worth, like you're valuable to a program. You're valuable, you know, and you talk about that money conversation. That is an awful conversation to have when you're like a young person, like having that conversation with a boss that you think is like, okay, you're at the height of your game. You're where I want to be in however many years. Like, I'm just this little person like coming to apply. And it's like, now I'm finding value in, like I mentioned before, my voice, like knowing that I have a voice and my voice actually matters is game changing and allows for all these conversations down the road that are going to be equally as intimidating, right? But I'm just coming at it from a different perspective and one that values my voice way more than I did even 2-3 years ago. So it's kind of a crazy journey, but you do get through it.
I think that is so true and so important. Like knowing your worth, like we were all confident as ourselves in the athlete and we would step on the court. Like no matter, like it didn't even matter. You could have a horrible week at practice, but it didn't matter. Like I have faith in my years of success and know that I'll be fine come game time. And, but like, if once you can start having that off the court mentality as well, and like, know that like, you're going to be able to perform well in your career and you're a great attribute, it's makes it so much easier. So that is all the questions I had for you. We haven't officially announced it yet, but I know we talked at our recent advisory meeting for Virago Project, but we're going to start having some workshops where people can kind of learn about the career. We have such great talent on our advisory board in all different facets of, you know, not even just the coaches, but sports nutritionists, sports psychologists, professional athletes. And I'm really, really excited because Stacey agreed to like help talk and help mentor some of these athletes. So this will definitely not be the last you're hearing of Stacey from us. But thank you so much, Stacey. We will be in touch soon.
Thank you.